Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Talk It Like a Man podcast. We are joined with a guest today to talk about psychotic depression. So kind of just giving everyone a warning going in, if anyone's got any concerns, just so you're aware and know what you're getting yourself into. Obviously, I'm Josh.
You are, yes. Thank you for this. Prista here, co-host, Talk It Like a Man podcast. Amazing. Have a very special guest today again, for a more in-depth discussion on what Josh mentioned, psychotic depression, and I want to let him do more of a introduction of himself and the topic that we're going to discuss.
Yes, hello, I'm Jacob, and I'm a first-year ethical hacking student, and I have been diagnosed with psychotic depression.
So I think the first thing we should get done and dusted, please tell us what that is.
Right, so there is obviously there's normal depression, which is like losing motivation, your day-to-day activities, when it starts affecting your daily life, and it's very similar to that. However, occasionally with depression, it can lead to psychosis at the same time. Even one in four people who go to hospital with depression actually have psychotic depression, so it's not an uncommon thing. But what it is essentially is where your bad mood and your lack of motivation can turn into hallucinations and delusions and voices and everything, and it can even be taste. You can even taste stuff and smell different kind of things. So yeah, that's a kind of little basis on what it is.
Okay. When did you first realize that you had such an issue? Was it something that followed you throughout your childhood, or was it something that manifested more in as you were getting older?
Well, my first admission to hospital with it was on January the 3rd last year. So what happened was I was sat at the top of my road back in Milton Keynes, and I felt a thingy at the back of my head. So I just kind of turned around, and there was this giant plague doctor-like being pointing a gun almost at the back of my head. So I turned around and I saw it, and that was my first proper experience with it. Prior to that, it was only really stuff which you would relate to anxiety, so stuff which you can see, but when you look at it, it goes away. Okay. So that's kind of my first like proper experience with it.
And did you seek help and support then, or were you unsure? Did you know what was going on really? Like
at the time, it was a shock. It was a very big shock, and obviously it was very scary. So that same day I was taken to a hospital where I had an evaluation, and obviously I was 17 at the time, 16 at the time even. So I then was forwarded to a CAMHS crisis team, which I then worked on with a while. Then I got referred to a core team, which, yeah, really helped. It was a team of like a consultant and a care coordinator and everything. And yeah, that was really, they're really good people. Yeah.
So how, just because you kind of said about the care plan and the support, how is it supported? Is it medication? Is it kind of counselling and talking therapies?
So medication does tend to be their last resort, as they always told me. If so they'll start off with therapy. So they'll start off like with kind of with the crisis team. They'll kind of just try get you to be safe. So as long as they'll keep you as safe as they'll try to keep you as safe as you can make yourself. And yeah, and then obviously with the normal CAMHS team, I did loads of therapies and stuff, which really did help. But in the end, yeah, they did end up putting my medication, and for these psychotic conditions, medication tends to be the way to go, even though it is a last resort. But it's important to kind of, yeah, because it's important to try the things first in case that helps naturally. So yeah.
So since you've started experiencing the treatment, how has that changed your experience with the condition?
Right. So yeah, I was treated by the CAMHS team, which was really good. Yeah, it helped a lot. I was first placed on medication about a few months afterwards. And yeah, it really does help. It really does help. And especially talking to someone as well really helps. Making sure that because they were really good at what they did, because they wouldn't alienate you or make you feel weird or something like that, because half the time you don't actually know what's going on, like, with your experiences. So the medication really helped, and I did go to, I was placed in hospital actually 2 days before my birthday last year, and the treatment there was really good. I had a combination of CBT and DBT, which is obviously cognitive behavior therapy and dialectical behavior therapy, and obviously medication and everything. So in hospital, they could give you medications there that you would normally not be able to get on the outside due to being in an enclosed environment. So if anything happened, you know, there's professionals literally a 30-second walk down your like thingy. It was very small, but having all the activities and everything was really, really, really beneficial. And currently, obviously, I still do attend therapy, but sometimes you'll catch a glimpse of a figure or something, but it's about coming to terms with, you know, what you have. Obviously, over normal medication and everything, and no one's perfect. So they do still occasionally happen, but not half to the same extent as they did last year.
Okay. Would you say that you've now gotten to a point where you almost have learned to live with knowing that sometimes you might catch a glimpse of a finger or something else that might catch your eye, but knowing that it's probably because of the condition? Have you come to terms with it, and has that changed the way you go about your daily life?
Yes, it is something you do have to accept, unfortunately. So, just kind of being back to myself has really, you know, really helped, like, especially with the medication, because you know it's like it's working, and it's just a really big relief, kind of knowing that. I'm sorry, I forgot the question again.
it's just about how has understanding and coming to terms with knowing the condition and its effect affected in your daily life so far.
So with the kind of the psychotic aspects, you have to accept it. Once, after a while, you do, once you're on medication, you're regulated, you can kind of realize, you know, that is just part of it. Let's just move on with our day. Don't let it get you down. And obviously with the side of depression, kind of getting out of bed can be quite hard sometimes. But yeah, it's you just got to accept it, really. And it doesn't make days to life harder. It just makes it different. That's the way I kind of like to look at it, because everyone has different experience, and it's important to remember that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, so, you know, you've said about the hospital stay. Was there an event that triggered that, if you don't mind talking about it? Obviously, if so, if you do, we can just move on.
That's perfectly fine. We'll talk about that. The main event that kind of got me into hospital was just me being a bit careless, really, kind of like, I remember once there was a railway track that I went down to, and I was kind of just laid there, and I was on the phone to my brother and everything. And thankfully he got me, you know, back down and everything. It was just being reckless, really, kind of, with that. And that kind of triggered me to go into hospital, because I actually went in there voluntarily. However, very, very quickly I was sectioned in hospital. So that's kind of the event, that kind of main event that kind of triggered it. But other stuff, like, yeah, just kind of didn't really help. And it kind of got to the point where, you know, that's what they needed to do to kind of keep myself safe and make sure that my treatment could actually progress instead of just going backwards.
And so that's a question with your treatment. So obviously, being at uni, are you on campus or are you studying online? Because all I'm thinking about is if you've had to move from Milton Keynes to Coventry, how has that helped? What, has there been any difficulties?
No, not really. They made the process really smooth, because obviously, like I said earlier, I started out with CAMHS, but obviously now I'm with adult services. I'm actually with a group called the Early Intervention Team. Okay. So this helps with, this obviously specializes in psychosis, antipsychotic disorders, of course. And I'm sorry, Matt, I forgot the question again.
Just how was it essentially transitioning to uni?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And kind of, was there any extra support put in, you know?
Yeah, so, like I said, I'm with the early intervention team, which specialises in psychosis, yeah. I have a group in Milton Keynes still, a team in Milton Keynes, and a team in Coventry now. Going there's, yeah, really, it's just normal, really. It feels like what I did back at home, except I can actually walk to this one, which is really good. So, yeah, they've made it, they've had so many stuff going, like diet nutritionists and everything, and like activities and support groups. I actually do think that there's more in Coventry actually than there was back at home.
Okay.
Like facilities and everything, which is what I'm really, really glad to sort out.
So when you travel back to Milton Keynes for kind of Christmas or summer, will you be able to access their services and then come back to here, or how will the process work?
So I'm very close communication with my care lead in Milton Keynes, and anytime, even if I go back for the weekend, I can access their services still. So unless I wanted to see my care coordinator again, which is very lovely, I could go back to Milton Keynes and I can speak to them there, and I could speak to kind of the whole kind of team and everything. And if they had an event back in Milton Keynes that I needed to, like, maybe, like, I don't know, a support group or something, I could go back and do that. It's very, very fluid, which helps so much. It is so nice to kind of be able to actually still go back home and receive it, come back to Coventry and receive it. It really does help, and they've made the process really easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's really cool. I do apologize. It's really cool that you've been put in a position where, even though you might require help, there's always help for you to get.
Yes.
Wherever you go. So I think that's just really, really well done. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Go back to your question, please.
I was just going to say, and kind of going on from that, I think that it's really good, and more people should know that if they are seeking support but still want to go to university, that the support can follow them and be in both places. Because I think people, it's often getting people to access the support, and if someone thinks, oh, well, I'll be gone in a year, what's the point? That actually, no, you can have the support, and the support can move with you. It's a kind of vital bit of information.
Yeah, because yes. it might even stop someone from relocating, going to uni, or just moving wherever they would like to. Because as you say, they might not know that support is available at multiple places, and it's easily accessible. You just have to kind of look for it.
Yes. Yeah. No. Like I was saying, the fluidity is just really amazing. And even now, if I wanted to, even I'm in Coventry, if I wanted to call my team in Milton Keynes, I perfectly can still. So yeah, it's completely not location based. And I can understand that for some people, it can be really off-putting, not knowing what service or care you'll receive inside where you go. But yeah.
So circling back to the condition itself, is it something that is hereditary? Is it something that you might trace in your family? Is it something that might pass on to your kids? What's the situation with the heritability of it?
Yeah, so I'm kind of going to speak a bit more about general, like, psychotic disorders, because obviously they all kind of work the same. So obviously not the same, but
I know what you mean.
So I know that with schizophrenia, if you were to have a child, there's around a 1/3 chance of them having it. It can be through family. Personally, my dad was adopted, so we're not quite sure about on his side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
My dad also claims to have experiences of his own in his youth, so youth kind of stage. So it can be kind of passed on down, but it also, at the same time, mine, obviously, the depression came first, and because of depression, my psychosis came. So it can kind of, if you have a high chance of, like, depression or another disorder, which can lead psychosis into yourself, then yeah, there's a thing there. But it's good to remember. Well, not good to remember, but it's something to remember that it is it's not an uncommon thing, and it's not something you know you should be embarrassed about. Like, for example, if everyone in the university was to stay up 3 days in a row, about what, half of them, 75% would actually experience a psychosis of some form. Yeah. So it's a natural thing that can affect anybody, but it kind of, your lifestyle choices also do affect it. So hardcore drugs like LSD and everything can also bring on drug-induced psychosis, which is very nasty. Yeah, it's very nasty, but it's something that people should, you know, consider and definitely seek help for if they do need it.
So yeah, I think you've just a summary. I think it's really, really important what you said about not being embarrassed about having the condition, because as you say, it's something that if you just don't sleep for a long time, you experience it yourself. So I think that's where like kind of the stigma of it comes from, because people don't really understand that it's literally nothing out of the ordinary. It's just ordinary in a different way.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was gonna kind of add to and ask about that, when what you've just mentioned there, just like with the stigma. And I was just gonna ask, why do you think it's not talked about much? Essentially because in my mind, I know about depression, I've heard a lot about depression, but obviously you've said that one in four people has psychotic depression, and I had never even heard of that as a concept. Like, I'd heard of psychosis and I'd heard of depression, I hadn't heard of them ever being linked. So do you think there's something there, or?
What the link between like the stigma and how many people have it?
Well, just what if there's a reason, if you think there is a stigma, and kind of what could we do?
Yeah, okay. So yeah, regarding the stigma, like you just said, yeah, I said earlier that one in four people who go to hospital with depression is psychotic. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, the stigma around it. People with psychosis in movies or psychotic disorders tend to be portrayed as evil, or that they are the villain of the story, or that they're murderers or something like that. But that is the complete opposite. People with psychotic disorders are way more likely to be victims of violent crimes than actually commit the crimes themselves, because they can be easily manipulated for such. If a supposed friend of yours was to start saying stuff that might trigger off a delusion, which is obviously a false belief, they could use that to manipulate you in many ways. So the stigma should really kind of be, it should obviously be removed, because you're not any more likely to commit any violent crime with the condition or not. And it's important that, as I already stated, just not to be embarrassed. That's the one thing I can't stress enough. Do not be embarrassed by what you have, because you are you, and you need to be proud of who you are. Some people require a little extra help, and many people require loads of extra help. And it's just, you know, being out there, being honest with yourself, being honest with, you know, your like therapy or your counselling, or even signing up to counselling in the first place, a massive great step into help break the stigma as well. Because, you know, the more people have, the more voices that can be heard, like more people could be listened to about the disorders. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no, and I think that's it. And I think what you said there about kind of you can reduce the stigma by like talking about it and signing up and just accepting that you need help. And I think that's often one of the toughest steps is admitting that someone needs support and they can't do things alone. And it can be very tough. And I think that's one of the things that definitely we are aiming to kind of support and encourage people to do, is to realize if they do need extra support, that it's okay to ask. And the majority of the time, the support's easy to find, and it will be given quickly and effectively.
Yeah, even if it's just through the simplest ways of going to the university resources and checking there first. And because even if they can't help you directly, they will allow you to find the help you need, and you will, as you say, receive the support if you just look for it. But as you've both said, the support won't come to you. You need to go to it. So again, what you said, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's just as normal as needing support with anything else. And I really like what you mentioned about everyone needing some kind of help. because it's totally true. No one has gone through life without a nudge from a place that they've needed it. So I think the message that you put out is something that we should really embed in the way we view mental health conditions in general and just cruising through life as we do.
Yeah, and on that kind of the support being easy to find, I just wanted to say that actually, so if you go onto the university website, onto the student portal, under Connections Matter, you can register for counselling support with like a few clicks. It's a very easy thing. So for anybody that is interested in looking for extra support, the university does offer it very quickly.
Yeah. Furthermore, I would also like to say quickly that I'm not going to put a percentage on it, but few people who experience psychotic disorders may not realize they have them as well. It may be normalized since a child, which is obviously a rare case, but does happen. So if you spot any symptoms in a friend, it is really important to encourage them as well. Like it is for any mental health disorder, you just need to understand and you just need to, you know, look out for them. It's not about sitting next to them and saying, oh, that's not real. You're not, what you're believing isn't right. Although that may give some sort of benefit, it can also bring loads of drawbacks. It can make them feel alienated and different and not like, you know, normal, but it's important to help them get professional help as well. So obviously you can't force them to, but it is really important. And if you see anything in a friend like that, such as hallucinations or delusions, or just even a low mood or anything, just encourage them to speak about it. That's the one thing it's really important to remember, because it's good to be there for your friends, even if they don't realize they need the help. So, yeah.
I think that's the main takeaway message we want to have from this amazing conversation. And I say amazing because I've learned so much in the past like 15, 20 minutes that I think if three more people did what you just did, we would have a so much better understanding of what it is, how to treat it, and the ways to combat it in general. So on that note, I think we've done a good job here, and I think we should kind of bring this discussion to a close. As we've mentioned already, if you do need any support, please do look for it, because it is there for you to get it. And on a more positive note, as I mentioned the previous week, we have things coming up. We'll definitely have more people like yourself trying to destigmatize their experiences and their conditions. So please tune into the following episodes as well. Until then, have an amazing time. Thank you, Jacob, for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been very nice.
Yeah, and we will see you next time.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.